one, and the things in the between he was able to repent of. And overall, God still looks at him in that way, the way he is right now, lying in his grave waiting to be resurrected. So today I'm going to talk about some of the good things that David did. Now, I'm not going to spend an awful lot of time on this. I have maybe about 20 minutes, but it might not even take that long if I don't read all the scriptures. But I just wanted to kind of cover some of the things that David did during his life, which were good things. You know, last time we read all the bad things that he did, and he had done a number of things that really benefited the nation of Israel. And that's where most of the good was directed to. to start out with, David was a defender of his people, a defender of Israel, the Israelites. And it was because he had so much faith in God. You remember the story, every child that goes to Sunday school or goes to a school in the churches of God, you know, you start out with the stories about the great stories of the Bible was David and Goliath. I mean, that's so widespread. I remember when I was a little kid, there was a cartoon on TV called Davy and Goliath. It might even be on there still. I don't know. but the victory over Goliath was a tremendous boost for the morale of the Israeli army. And you remember the story when it starts out, they were in fear of Goliath. I mean, this guy, what was he, 9-10 feet tall maybe? And he was just spewing out one curse word after another against not only Israel, but against the God of Israel. And that's when David really got his anger up, that anybody like that would say the things that he was saying against the Lord, the God of Israel. And obviously, with God's help, David was able to slay Goliath. And not only Goliath, but there was a big slaughter that day when the Philistines were sent running. And the Philistines had been and were for a while after that a constant thorn in the side of Israel. David, in his lifetime, got rid of that threat for a long time. Now, let's look at 1 Samuel 18. We'll read a couple of scriptures here. 1 Samuel 18. Now, this is right after he had killed Goliath. And notice what happened here. 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1. It came to pass when he had made an end of speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan, that was Saul's son, of course, was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. So at that point in time, Saul was ingratiated with what David had done for Israel. Jonathan became his best friend for life at that point in time. And in verse 3, it says, Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him. Remember now, he was a prince. He was a son of the king. And he gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. Quite a tribute to David that this young man would give him his clothing, his sword, his accoutrements of war as a gesture of their friendship. And so in verse 5, David went out wherever Saul sent him and behaved himself wisely, and Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So things were really going great for David at that point in time. He was making quite an impression not only with God but also with the people there of Israel. Well, in verse 6, it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And as you know, that really irritated Saul. And so it says here in verse 8, Saul was very angry, very wroth, it says in the King James, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands, and what can he have more but the kingdom? and saw I David from that day and forward. You know, the pettiness of Saul really comes out there. You would think that a good king would have looked at what David did, saw that he did something that was beneficial for the kingdom, and wouldn't have cared what the people were saying. So what that David might have slain, whatever, 10 times more people than he did. Everybody should be working for the good of the country. And so you really can't say that this is something isolated, can you? You look at politics today, and everybody, it's a dog-eat-dog in the political world, and who's looking out for the people? Well, not too many. Some of them maybe, but not too many. Well, David then had to be on the run from that time on. And there's a lot of stories there we'll skip over, but I think everybody knows most of those stories. On several occasions, Saul was in the vicinity of David, and David had actually had the opportunity to kill Saul, and he could have done it. But he steadfastly would not kill Saul, even when he had the chance, even when he was encouraged to. And David saw Saul as the Lord's anointed. So David had that integrity about him that he would not kill the king of Israel, even though he knew that, you know, he was told he would eventually become the king. He knew that it wasn't in his jurisdiction to speed the day when he would be the next king. And so David would not touch Saul because Saul was the Lord's anointed. And just think of the chaos that would have been brought on the nation of Israel if he had murdered Saul. I mean, there would have been sides, those taking side with Saul, his memory, those taking side with David, and it would have been just an impediment to bringing order and peace to the nation of Israel. So David always in his mind was looking out for Israel, the people. Now, he was also a protector of the Israelites. If you turn over to 2 Samuel now, 2 Samuel 21, and I'll begin reading here in verse 10. I think I might be in the wrong book here. 1 Samuel. Let's try 1 Samuel once. 1 Samuel 21. Yeah, it's 1 Samuel, I'm sorry. 1 Samuel 21, and the last few verses here, starting with verse 10. David arose, and he fled that day for fear of Saul, and he went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is not this David, the king of the land? Did they not sing one another of him in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s?'" You know what's amazing to me? People in a foreign country heard about that. Word of mouth. I mean, they had no telephones or anything to report it, but word of mouth spread very, very quickly, apparently, in those days. And David laid up these words in his heart, and he was very afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. And he changed his behavior before him and feigned himself mad in their hands. This is almost comical. In order to protect himself, he pretended he was crazy. Now, just picture David, who apparently lost all of his self-respect there in order to save his life, he feigned himself mad in their hands. It says here in the King James, he scrabbled on the doors of the gate. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I guess maybe he was clawing at the doors of the gate. He let his spit fall down upon his beard. That was very, very undignified. And then Achish said to his servants, it seemed to work, "Look, you see, the man is mad. Wherefore then have you brought him to me? Do I have need of madmen that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" Well, here in chapter 22, then it says, David therefore departed and escaped to the cave Adullam. So he had done this as an act just to get out of the presence of this king of Gath. And he went to the cave Adullam, and when the brethren and of all of his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And it says, everyone that was in distress. Now, notice the people that came to David. No politicians, no rich people, no upper crust of society. Everyone that was in distress, it said, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was discontented, they all gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. So the very beginnings of his armed guard, of his army, were, you might say, the outcasts of society. He cared for those people, and he was their protector. Now, that's notice here, we'll skip ahead a little bit to 1 Samuel 30. Yeah, I have written here in my notes again, 2 Samuel. I don't know why. I'm just going to take a second to correct that in case I have to ever have to give the sermon again. 1 Samuel 30. And let's just read about David, how much he cared for the people. How much he, you get kind of a sense of something that happened in Abraham's time that Abraham did. It came to pass, chapter 30, verse 1, when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south, and Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag, and burned it with fire. Ziklag was where he had set up his, you might say, headquarters when he was on the run. So now it was destroyed. And they had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire. And their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. Very tragic scene. David's two wives were taken captive, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him. You know, I guess they blamed him for being away when all this happened, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord. That's who he turned to. And David said to Abiathar, the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray, bring me hither the ephod, bring it here. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. And David inquired at the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue. For you are sure, you shall surely overtake them and without fail recover all. So David now had the word of God on his side. He trusted it. And so David went, it says, he and the 600 men that were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those that were left stayed behind. But David pursued, he and his 400 men, for 200 abode behind, which were so faint that they could not go over to the brook Besor. And they found an Egyptian in a field, and they brought him to David and gave him bread, and he did eat, and they made him drink water. And they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him, for he had not eaten any bread or drunk any water for 3 days and three nights. And David said to him, to whom do you belong? From where are you from? Where do you come from? And he said, I am a young man of Egypt. I am a servant to an Amalekite. And my master left me because 3 days ago I fell sick. We made an invasion upon the south of the Kerethites and upon the coast which belongs to Judah and upon the south of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. And David said to him, can you bring me down to this company? Can you show me where they are? He said, swear to me by God that you will neither kill me nor deliver me to them, to my master, and I will bring you down to this company. And so when he had brought him down, behold, they were spread abroad upon the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. And David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day. 24-hour fight, killing all of these people that had burned and destroyed Ziklag. There escaped not a man of them except for 400 young men who rode upon camels and fled. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away. And David rescued his two wives, and there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all. So you can imagine that this greatly enhanced David's reputation. He went, in the course of just a couple days, from being on the edge of the danger of being stoned, to being a national hero. Once again, showing his love of his people, his desire to save his people, which he literally did in this case. Now, that describes something that happened, events that happened before David became king. Now, he did a lot of good things after he became king, too. We shouldn't just, you know, focus on his adultery and killing of Uriah the Hittite. But upon the death of Saul, when Saul died, not from David's hand, but otherwise, civil war actually broke out in Israel when he died. Now, just the fact that civil war broke out when he died, just think what it would have happened if David had killed him. But David, at that point when the civil war broke out, moved his residence to Hebron, a city that's only about 19 miles southwest of Jerusalem. And there is where he was made king over Judah, just the nation of Judah. And he reigned there for 7.5 years. Then, at one point, he actually captured Jerusalem, which being held by Jebusites, and he made Jerusalem his capital. Now, David shows some wisdom here on how he could bring Israel together. By making Jerusalem the capital, Jerusalem was situated right on the border between Judah and Israel. And so it was kind of a compromise site to bring Israel and Judah together. The two sides would be in close proximity to them, to each other, there in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, now being in the hands of the Israelites with David, allowed commerce to go, which had been stifled for a long, long time. Commerce could now go from Jerusalem to the northern tribes and beyond to other countries. And that flow of commerce is what started to make Israel a very prosperous nation. Again, as a result of what David did. He did something good. Let's give him credit. He did something very good. David had a number of national achievements, which were very good for the nation. First of all, as king of the United Empire, he organized an efficient national government. Yeah, you know, if you have an inefficient national government, you're in bad shape. And we look around today, we've got how many nations that have inefficient national governments? You think of Haiti, you think of third world countries. And that's all it takes, just to have inefficiency, maybe corruption in the government, it doesn't last long. But he organized a very efficient government on the national level. And just as importantly, he organized an efficient national military. He, being a man of war, knew what he was doing. Those two things, a government that ran efficiently, a military that ran efficiently, gave that nation a great start to get off on under his rule. He also did something that we can read about in Joshua. Now, it doesn't tell us that David did it here in Joshua, but we can read about something that David got involved in. In Joshua 20, in verses 1 through 4, this is talking about when the Lord was talking to Joshua about setting up cities for refuge. The Lord also spoke to Joshua and said, "Speak to the children of Israel and say, appoint out for you cities of refuge, whereof I spoke unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that kills any person unawares and unwittingly may flee there, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of blood. And when he that does flee unto one of those cities shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city and shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders of that city, they shall take him into the city unto them and give him a place that he may dwell upon them, dwell among them." These were the famous cities of refuge. Now, over in Joshua 21, verses 1 to 3, it says, "Then came near the heads of the fathers of the Levites unto Eleazar the priest and unto Joshua the son of Nun, to the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel. And they spoke unto them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses to give us cities to dwell in," the Levites. Remember, they had no inheritance. "To give us cities to dwell in, with the suburbs thereof for our cattle. And the children of Israel gave unto the Levites out of their inheritance, at the commandment of the Lord, these cities and their suburbs." And then it goes on to list them. So preparations were made there, not only for dwelling places for the Levites out of the inheritances from the other tribes, but also cities that were to be cities of refuge. I gave a sermon on this a couple of years ago, if you might remember what those cities of refuge were for. But the groundwork was laid there. But surprisingly, by the time David took over the United Kingdom, not all those cities of refuge had ever even been set up yet. Some of them were in territories that weren't even held by Israelites. And so one of the things that he really did to bring God's original intent on how to deal with accidental deaths, what we would call involuntary manslaughter or accidental manslaughter, what David did was bring about everything that God wanted done. All of the cities of refuge, I think there were six of them, and he confirmed the fact that the cities that the Levites would live in would be theirs, and all part of that efficient national government, not according to David's way, but according to the Lord's way. And that was something else that made him so effective as a king. He tried to do things God's way. So all of these cities now that God intended for specific uses were now fully functional. In the area of religion, and I'm not going to go into reading any more scriptures now, I don't want to take this out too long, but remember, David brought the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. There's a whole section there, an interesting story, where the cart fell over and all the little ancillary stories. But it was David who instigated that, bringing the Ark of the Covenant up to Jerusalem, so God's presence there in the Ark would be in Jerusalem. David, and in other religious matters, was credited with organizing music for services, with organizing musicians in service to their worship services. That was David's idea. Everything was organized. He was a tremendous organizer. David also was the one who divided the priests and the Levites into 24 divisions or courses. And those are memorable because we can actually use the knowledge of those 24 courses and who was in them to roughly date about what time of the year Jesus was born because of knowing when John the Baptist's father was serving in the temple and knowing how the difference in the length of time between the birth of John the Baptist and Jesus. So, of course, that goes back to David being the one who set up the priests and the Levites. And he did it because there were so many priests by the time that he came along that they needed organizing. And once again, for the good of the nation, he did that. And finally, maybe one of the supreme things that he did that we look at is he left plans and he left materials when he died for Solomon to build the temple. You know, part of the foundation or whatever still is in existence today as it went through several rebuildings. But David was the one who built the temple for the Lord. So in conclusion, as we can see, David did a lot of good for his country. And it went from the civil acts that he did to the religious. He did it all with one intent, not to glorify himself, but to glorify God. And so that is something that we can look to in David's life and appreciate the good that he did. So like I said, next time on that last day of Unleavened Bread, I'll talk about David again, and we'll talk about the qualifications that he brings to the table upon his resurrection for being the king of Israel.